Okay, good morning. Hopefully I'm audible and the session is being recorded now. And let's see. So my thoughts for today were to set up the collection of spaces that we're going to be focusing on actually throughout the course. Basically, mostly they're definitions we've already seen with one new one, and then discuss which functions live in which of these spaces and give some and let you guys try to think of some examples also. All right, so the basic setup for the spaces of functions that we are looking at follows from the definitions of continuity and derivatives, and both of those need limits. So let me just start there. So definition. So our setup will be that we have a function f on an open interval. And we have some point inside that interval that we're focusing on. So we have a less than c less than b to some point there. And then there are various things that we can define. So definition, and these come from different parts of the notes, Hunter's notes. My numbering, by the way, is from Hunter's notes. That's where all my numbers come from. All right, so 6.1 is the definition of a limit, and that says it's the limit as x approaches c of on my function f of x is equal to some limit, usually L. And this is if we have, and I usually like to write it out with all its detailed quantifiers. So for every epsilon greater than zero, there exists a delta greater than zero, so that for every x in this interval AB, with x being sufficiently close to c, so the difference between x and c in absolute value is bounded by delta, then it is true that the value of the function is close to the value that we want. So the value of f, so f of x minus this purported limit L, is bounded by epsilon. Right? So that's the definition from last term. Okay, and then we have some new ones that we, well, here's another one from last term. So the first thing we did with that last term was to consider when a function is continuous at a point. Okay, so f is continuous. Actually, maybe I'll write out the whole word. Continuous, but I won't do that very often. Normally, I'll just write CTS at C. Okay, if this limit agrees with the value, so the limit as x approaches C of my function f of x is f evaluated at c, so that should be familiar from the last term, and also a little bit from 21, although it was not emphasized. And then the definition that we gave on Monday is, and again, something you saw briefly in 21, was that f is differentiable . Which is again a long word, so let me write the diff at C. Okay, and this time I gave a name for it, F prime at C, or D F at C, which was the limit as X approaches C of this difference quotient, F of X minus F of C divided by X minus C. And what we required was that exists. So that was differentiable. And now let me add one new notation. This one's new here, 8.18. And it's just combining those two concepts. It's a notion of a continuously differentiable. So f is continuously differentiable even longer. Again, it's something that happens at a point, so at C. If F prime well, let me write it this way. So if F is differentiable in a neighborhood of C, okay, and so that's the differentiable part, but now we want continuously, and the derivative is continuous at C. So those are the different, oh, sorry, did I put a zero where I should have had a C? I did, thank you for catching that. Yes, so right here, thank you. X should approach C, thank you. Okay, all right, so those are the main definitions, and we are, the focus, the way that this course approaches functions is as is families of functions and spaces of functions, and the main spaces are ones that we can now define. This is all they need to define, and then most of the class is talking about their properties. So so let me just write down what the spaces of functions that come from this are. Okay, so let's say that if F is continuous in an interval AB, we write F is in this space of functions, and the space of functions is the continuous functions. C is for continuous on AB, but actually we often have levels of continuity. So this is often just called C0, just to remind us that it's the basic type of continuity. Okay, and similarly, if F is differentiable in the interval, we look at all those functions together and call those D0. This is a less common notation. The C1 comes in a lot more often. And finally, if F is continuously differentiable in this interval, then we write that the F is in, and this is where the one comes in. So this is the next level of continuous, is not only is my function continuous, but so is its derivative. Okay, so those are the levels that we look at. Okay, and so then the relationships between these are one of the things we care about in this class, and I can prove some of them today. All right, so actually, just thinking about it, which of these is the contains the most functions? Which of these is the most is the largest space? Is that clear? The first one, that's correct. Yeah, no, not C1, it's the first one. The C1 has the most restrictions. That's the hardest thing for a function to be, right? But this one is the has the fewest restrictions. So that's the easiest thing for a function to be, is to be continuous. Okay. So so the containments we get are that C0 is the big one. And it contains, let me just do 0, 1, why not? Okay, it contains the, differentiable functions I changed my notation from this morning. Let me call this not D0 but D1. The one is supposed to tell me how many derivatives it has, and this one has one derivative, so let me call that D1. I apologize. There we go. Okay. The one tells me how many derivatives. Okay, and so so if it's and then clearly C1 is even smaller than that, because we have an extra restriction, right? It has to not only have the derivative, which is what D1 says, but that derivative has to be continuous. So it's an extra extra restriction is that it be continuous. Okay, and then you can keep going. All right, we can have a concept of twice differentiable, d2 is 0, 1. And you can keep going like that. Okay, so let's see. So how would I, let me just indicate what's true about these. So the other thing that's true is that these are actually different from each other. So this is not equal, this is not equal, and this is not equal. Okay, so they're all proper containments. And let me just note, this containment of the continuously differentiable ones and the differentiable, that's just by definition. So that one is just the definition. So that's straightforward. The fact that every differentiable function is continuous, that's something I'm going to prove. And so this is a theorem. This is a theorem, 8.17, I think. In this case, we'll prove that today, 8.17. Okay. And this is the same theorem if you think it through. Right, so for containments, we need proofs. But how do I show that they're not equal? How do I show that these containments are proper? What would I have to do to say that, that these two are different from each other and these two are different from each other? Is that clear? That's right, I need to find some element that's in one set and not the other, right? And what are those elements? Those are functions, of course, right? Because these are sets of functions, right? So I would need to find some function that's in here, but not in here. Whoops, in here, but not in here, right? And some function that's in here, but not in here, et cetera, so that they're different, right? So I would need example functions for properness. We're not equal, I need example functions. Okay, and what I want to do is run through what some of those examples are and then give you some minutes in the chat room to figure out a few more. So can anyone see a function that would distinguish between some of these? So just to recap, what we need is to distinguish between these, you would need a function that's continuous, but is not differentiable. And to distinguish between these, you would need a function that is differentiable, but that derivative is not continuous. And distinguish between these, we would need a function that is has a continuous derivative, but no second derivative. So let's see, can anyone think of a function that deals with any of those three situations?
For the first one, you could have like absolute value of x.
That's a very good example. It's actually the one that I would have started with also. So that's a good one. So we have absolute value of x. Correct. Right. So that one is continuous. So it lives inside of this space, which is all the continuous functions. Let me switch colors. This is blend in as much. Right. So absolute value of x. Yeah, so it's continuous, but remember it's got that corner there, so it doesn't have a tangent line, so it's not differentiable, okay? So that distinguishes between those two, right? And maybe I'll write that out in words down below just to summarize it. So e.g., f of x equals absolute value of x has f in c0, but not in D1. Okay, the next one is considerably trickier. All right, so in fact, it's finding something who's that has a derivative, but that derivative is not continuous is quite tricky. However, it is an example that is in the text and that we've been talking about. So if you've been reading ahead, you may know what it is. So can anyone think of a function that has this property? So it's one that's differentiable, but its derivative is a not continuous function. And it's a function we looked at last time that has this property. No. Okay, well, I will prove today that it has that property so that it's clear. But the function is this funny one that we were playing around with last time, which is x squared sine of 1 over x. Okay, that's the one that has this curious property. So it has this function is differentiable, but the derivative is not continuous. So that means it's not in C1, right? So this is because F prime is not in C0. It's not continuous. Same statement. Okay, so let me go through the proof of that one. Okay. And then, as I said, I'll give you a little time to try to think about some more examples that differentiate between those two, distinguish between those various sets that we have, sets of functions. All right, so actually, let me just start with the first one. And I'll just do the second one. So, so I want to show two. All right, so what's the work that I have to do? So first of all, I've claimed that it's differentiable. Okay, so how would we, oh, sorry. All right, what did I do wrong? So I remember I wrote this function last time and I think I made the same error last time. But this function is not defined everywhere, right? Where is it not defined? As written. So I need to split it into two parts. Yeah, exactly. X equals zero. So I have to separately tell you what value it has when x is equal to zero. Because I'm divided by x, okay? So I can't define it using that first formula at x equals zero. So I have to separately do so. That's what I've done. Okay, so two, I need to show that it's differentiable. So what do I need to do for that? So differentiate away from zero with rules. And B, differentiate at zero, and I'm writing this quickly because we already did it with the definition. This is what we did last time. Okay, and so just summarizing what we had last time, does everyone remember what that derivative is? F prime of x is equal to, well, how about at zero? That's actually the most interesting one. And maybe I'll draw a picture. So remember what the derivative of that function is at zero? So the claim is there's a slope of the tangent line there at zero.
Wasn't it zero by squeeze theorem?
That's correct. We used the squeeze theorem and we got that it was zero. That's exactly what happened. And so that is the right answer. So so we got zero here. And as noted, this was computed via the squeeze theorem. Which helped with that computation. And the other part we just did using the rules, the product and the chain rules. And let's see, where's my function? So that gave us 2x sine of 1 over x minus the cosine of 1 over x. Okay, so that one be computed using rules. Okay, so we computed that, and so I'm not going to do that again. So the remaining thing, f of x is in this d1. It's one time differentiable in the whole real line. So that's my interval. Okay. Okay, so the second thing that's asserted over here is that it's not in C1, okay? So what does that require? That requires that the derivative not be continuous, okay? So, and if I'm trying to show that it's not continuous, it's enough to find one point at which it's not continuous, and which point is likely to work there? Which value of x?
Zero.
Exactly. That's where everything interesting is happening with this function. So that's the one we're going to look at. So the next thing to do is to compute that f prime is not continuous at zero. Okay, and hence f is not in C1 of R. Okay, so what does it mean that f prime is not continuous at zero? That is, that the limit as x approaches zero of f prime of x is different from f prime at zero, and we computed f prime at zero to be zero. Okay, so this is something that we had of course, from up above. So this is just copying from here. Whoops. Okay. So I simply need to compute that the derivative, that the limit of this this function up here is not zero, and then I'm done. All right. So let me try that. So and let me do it explicitly this time. So so assume, for contradiction, that this is false. So the limit as x approaches zero of f prime of x is in fact equal to zero. Okay, so if that's that's actually equal to zero, then I can go back to the definition of a limit, which I guess scrolled slightly off. Oops. I don't like to scroll off my definition, but I can go back to the definition of a limit here, which I will do. And hence, by the definition of limit, what does that tell me? It says that for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists some delta greater than zero, so that whenever I have the absolute value of x minus zero, so just the absolute value of x, less than or equal to less than delta, we have that the absolute value of f prime of x minus f prime of zero, which is zero, so this is just zero, is less than epsilon. So is that clear? So that's what we are assuming, and now we want to get a contradiction. So what's the contradiction going to be? Of course, the thing that's being asserted is this. So this is going to be our contradiction in the end. All right. Oh yeah, thank you for figuring out what happened with the chain rule. Thanks. Okay, and that's what I want to end up the contradiction with. Now, the assertion is that this is true for all epsilon, and I just want a contradiction. So I get to choose any epsilon I want, and that gives me a contradiction, and I'm and I get a contradiction. So I get to choose, okay? And now my assertion says that there exists some delta. So this is given to me. Okay, and but then it says, I get to choose again. And then we want a contradiction. Okay, so is it clear? That's the structure of such a proof. I get to choose an epsilon, and then the assertion, this assumption here gives me a delta, and then I get to choose an x, so that I get the contradiction, then I'm done. Okay, so let me just try that. So, and I've already, and the way you prove these is you work it out forward and then go backward. So I'm going backward now. So choose epsilon equals a half. Okay. So by the assumption, by the hypothesis, by which I mean this sentence here, I there is delta. Okay, and now again I get to choose, and so I choose x. Okay, and here's where the tricky bit comes in, where you had to sort of work backward to figure out what to choose x to be. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose an x so that when I plug it into my function, which has these sines and cosines, it's easy to deal with. And so I'm going to take it to be a 1 over 2 to the n, sorry, 2n pi, with pi, with n large enough that I have the first part of this conclusion is hold. So this part holds. And so then if something goes wrong, it's going to be this one. All right. So such that enough that x is less than my delta. Okay. So is it clear that that's possible? So I have some delta, maybe 1/1,000,000. And I now get to choose my n. And I'm going to just make it big enough that this fraction is less than 1/1,000,000. All right, and then compute. Okay, so we know that, let's see, epsilon is equal to a half, because that's what I wrote up above, that was my choice. And we know that that's bigger than this absolute value of f prime of x. Okay, because that's my hypothesis. Right, that's this here, it says that. Okay. And now I can compute what that actually is. And so this is equal to, okay, so I just look at my f prime here away from zero, and that's this function. So I just take that function and plug in my x. So this is 2 times the x that I have, which is 1 over 2 pi n times the sine of 2 pi n minus the cosine of 2 pi n. Okay, so does that make sense? So I plugged in my n, I'm sorry, my x, and I plugged in my function f prime. So those are the two things I substituted in. Okay, and finally, what are those values? So what is this sine of 2 pi n? Is that clear? Yeah, it's zero, right? It doesn't matter how big n is or what n is. Any multiple, any integer multiple of 2 pi just gives me zero. And what about the cosine term? So this one's zero. And the cosine?
One.
That's right. So this one is always one. Okay, so then I can just substitute it. So I know what the actual number is. So this is equal to absolute value of zero minus one, which is just one. Okay, so I have that a half is bigger than one, which is false. And why am I not upset by the fact that that's false? Is that clear? Made an assumption for contradiction right at the beginning. Okay, and then I ended up with my contradiction, which is what I wanted. So my assumption was false, and I get that this is not equal to zero, and that's what I wanted. Okay, so we're done. So the prediction. So the limit as x approaches zero of f prime of x is not equal to zero. So f prime is discontinuous at zero. And hence, my function is not continuously differentiable. Okay, and I'm done. Okay, any questions about the logic or setup there? Okay, then actually what I'd like you guys to do is I'm gonna pop you into breakout rooms, and what I'd like is for you to look at the following. So in breakout rooms, so find more examples. Distinguishing the two that I did, and also this new one. So there are two that I did here. I did this one. We found one example there. We found one example here. Let me write it in. And but this one, we still haven't found an example. So you might try to find an example of this one, okay? Okay, distinguishing C0 from D1, D1 from C1, and C1 from D2, okay? So that means something that's continuously differentiable, but it has no second derivative. And then the other thing I want you to do is figure out what C infinity and D infinity are. So for example, are they the same? Okay, are there any questions then before I drop into breakout rooms? Okay, yeah, sorry, I didn't tell you how long I was going to leave you there. But anyway, that was 4 minutes. All right, let's see. So did any of those three rooms find examples that distinguish between these spaces?
Well, we got square root of absolute value of x for C0 and D1.
Okay. Right, so that's a continuous function. Right, but it's even worse than a corner there at the at zero. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good example. Anyone else?
We came up with x ln of x, but we were unsure since ln of x is already, like, you can't use a zero. You already have to bound ln of x to begin with.
So one thing to do with something like x ln x would be what we did with x squared 1 over x would be to just give it a value at zero.
Right.
Okay. And if we did that, is that do people know? Is that going to be a continuous function? So it's a little tricky, right? This one's going to infinity. I'm sorry, to zero, and this one's going to infinity. But how do I know whether that product is going to zero? So you should go back and think about the tricky limits that you do sometimes. So if we take the limit as x goes to zero of x natural log of x, what would be the approach? Absolutely, what would be the approach to finding such a limit? There's a trick for that type of limit. So what's the only good trick for limits, first of all?
Can you manipulate it so you use L'Hopital's rule, so you do ln of x over 1 over x?
Precisely. That's exactly the right trick to use, and that's exactly how to do it. So it's you rewrite it as natural log of x divided by 1 over x. Correct. And then, as you said, this fits into L'Hopital's rule. And does that go to zero? Cancel out the powers of x. Okay, so that is a continuous function. So continuous, yes. So it at least is continuous, and then one just has to figure out whether it's differentiable at zero, and you can try the derivative and see if it's differentiable. Okay. Yes, yeah, so that's a fun function to play with. Actually, how might I have guessed that that was going to be going to zero? So I have kind of a quick shorthand when I just stare at a function like that to try to guess. Does anyone know? So this function goes to infinity, but it does it very slowly. Okay, so I think of a log as a very slow function. And x is polynomials are faster than logs. So that's why I would have guessed that that's the right answer. And then I compute, as we just did, to see that it really is. So that's a continuous one. Good? Yeah, so maybe we can put it in this column. This is continuous. Oops. Okay, now the next column, of course, things that are differentiable but not continuously, those are really tricky. And so, you know, we found our example from class, but that's actually tricky to think about others that do that. Those are really pretty tricky. So let's assume unless people thought of a fun one, that let's skip over that one. So what about things that are twice differentiable, sorry, not twice differentiable? So things that would live in this category, so that are, have perfectly good continuous derivatives, but don't have two derivatives. So they're not twice differentiable. Did anyone think of anything like that? Okay, well, I let me not give it away so you can try to think some more, but let me give a hint though. If I want to find something that's differentiable, but continuously differentiable, but not twice, what I want to do is I want to find something whose derivative looks like one of these functions that's continuous, but not differentiable itself. Okay, so I want to find something whose derivative looks like this. And we had tricks for finding functions whose derivatives are things. So that's... So I do it. Okay. I did have a few minutes and I want to do this other theorem. So let's just see if anyone had any thoughts about, these are called smooth, C infinity or D infinity functions. First of all, are those the same thing? So this C infinity means that it has every single derivative. So it's got the fifth, sixth, seventh, every single derivative exists and it's continuous. This just says every single derivative exists. Five, six, seventh, they all exist, but it doesn't require that they be continuous. Are those the same?
I mean, I would say that they're the same because, we didn't prove that yet, right? But we were going to prove that if it's differentiable, true. It's continuous, right? So it's if it's infinitely differentiable, then it should also be infinitely continuous.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
And then somebody in my group had said that that would probably be represented by like polynomials.
Yeah, polynomials are a great example, right? Because I can just keep taking derivatives. Of course, soon those derivatives become kind of boring because they become zero, but you can still differentiate. You can differentiate zero without any problem. So polynomials are a perfectly good example. Are there other ones that don't become zero eventually? Yeah, like trig functions. Those are also very nice. These are usually called smooth, by the way. Those are very nice. Those are very nice examples of smooth functions. Yeah. Right. Okay. So that's those are fun things to think about, and it's a class of functions we will look at later on in the course. Okay. So if there are no other questions about that, I'd like to just quickly run through this proof of 18.17 to show that if f is differentiable at C, then it's also continuous at C. All right. So proof. Okay, so we're assuming that it's differentiable at C. So we assume f is differentiable at C. So that means that the limit as x approaches C of f of x minus f of C to C divided by x minus C exists. Okay. And now and we want to show the limit as x approaches C, it should be continuous. It means that f of x is equal to f of, see, I'm going to put a little question mark because I haven't proved that yet. So that's what we want to show, okay? And as an aside, let me note the things that I'm going to use. So first, facts about limits. If I have two limits, what happens if I take the product and a sum of those things? So if the limit as x approaches c of kappa or f of x is equal to L, and the limit of capital G of x as x approaches c is some other thing, m, then what happens if I take the sum and the product? So the limit as x approaches c of f plus g, and the limit as x approaches c of the product.
You would just sum the limits or multiply the limits?
Exactly. So they behave exactly as you would hope. They do the nicest imaginable thing, right? Okay, so we want to make use of that. And actually, I want to use one more limit just because it's going to come in handy. It's a very easy one, but just to have it written here. So if I take the limit as x approaches c of x minus c, what is that one?
Zero.
That's just zero. And so I want to make use of that, okay? So when I go through this proof. Okay, so so now I can just compute. All right, so the thing that I want to compute is f of c. And what I'd like to do is end up getting this value. Okay, so let me try that. So this is equal to f of c. I need a time here. So plus the limit as x approaches c of f of x minus f of c divided by x minus c times the limit as x approaches c of x minus c. Okay, so why is that true? Is that clear? So this one we already worked out, right? This is zero. So that's good. We've taken zero times something, but why can I use this one? What's the problem? What are bad things to multiply zero by? If it's not defined, then that could be a problem, right? So this is some number. Why do I know that this is defined?
We already specified that it's differentiable at C.
Correct. So this is where we're using our hypothesis. It's important when you're doing a proof to make sure you realize where you're using your hypothesis, and this is it. We're using the fact that this limit exists, right? So this is our hypothesis, and so that's what we're using right here. Okay. So this exists by hypothesis. And this, as we just computed, is zero. Okay, so now we're in good shape, and now we can just use our limit rules. So the limit of the product is the same as the product of the limit. So this is this is just a constant. So the limit is x goes to c of f of c. Well, that's just f of c. Nothing changed. And this is the limit as x goes to c of, well, I can take the product of these two things. So f of x minus f of c divided by x minus c times x minus c. Okay, and of course those x minus c's cancel. And then I can add the limits. So then I have the limit as x goes to c of f of c plus f of x minus f of c, and that's just limit as x goes to c of f of x. And this was what we wanted to show. So we're done. So we got f of c is equal to the limit as x approaches c of f of x. Okay, any questions about that proof? Okay, very good. So I'm out of time and we'll stop the recording, but I will stick around for office hours for the next half hour if people have any questions or thoughts. Also, I see there are comments in the chat that I have not